Today's daf in the Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf kuf chof gimel, and we are holding on daf kuf chof beit amud beit. We got to the top. Right, sorry. Just let me remind you, so we can get directly into today's daf. The last thing that we had was the big machlokas over here between Rav Yehuda and Rabba. Are we talking about in our Mishnah that allows us to use a hammer for opening up nuts or something? Are we talking about like a carpenter's hammer, or are we talking about you just take it out of your toolbox and you can decide you want to use it on Shabbos for a nut? Or are we talking about a hammer that was miyuchad for nuts, not necessarily manufactured for nuts, but that you had determined that this was going to be the thing you're using as your nutcracker? So, according to Rav Yehuda, you need to have a nutcracker that was actually made in your mind for that purpose before Shabbos. Because otherwise it's a klisha malach to le'isser. And Rabbi Yehuda, it's a klisha malach to le'isser, would be usher to move even l'tzorach gufa. L'tzorach gufa means to use for its own purposes as a tool, except as a tool not for a nail, but as a tool similar to the tool, as a tool for cracking nuts. Okay. Then we had Rabba. Rabba said, no, you're talking about any type of hammer, because as we concluded, the last things that we learned yesterday is that a dover shemalach to le'iser is actually mutter to use at tzorach gufo, does not need yichud for Shabbos, before Shabbos, for that purpose at all. So, today we're going to move on, line 2, on daf kuf chav gimel amad aleph, ayis ve'abaya l'Rabba. So Abaye asks on Rabba, who's claiming that there's no problem for actually using something that is mamish made for Israel. I mean, like it's a big hammer, you're taking it out of your toolbox, and nonetheless, Rabba's saying it's mutter. What are you going to do with the following sugya? It says over here that a miducha. Now, miducha is a mortar. So we've got over here a mortar and pestle device. It's full. In this particular case, the mortar is full of crushed garlic. It's used for crushing garlic. So if it has garlic in it, so then metal telino tough. If it has garlic in it, then you can actually move it because you're moving it on the basis of the garlic that's in it. But imlav in metal telino tough. However, if you just want to take that mortar, let's say, turn it upside down and sit on it, you can't do that. Now, why not? According to you, my dear Rabba, why in the world do we need? Remember, if the garlic is actually in it, now there's two possible approaches over here. One is, according to, it's fascinating, that there are many shittas brought even la halacha the Shulchan Aruch, that if something which is a dover usser, such as a mortar, is the container for something that's mutter, so then you're allowed to move it agav that which is in it. It becomes potel to that which is in it. It's sort of like the opposite of a basis dover ha'osr. This becomes a basis dover ha'mutter particularly. Not everybody agrees to that. And the meaning, therefore, of this gemara, according to them, would be not because it happens to have something in it, but because it has the very garlic that it was made for to crush in it. Because part of its initial purpose is obviously not only crushing the garlic, but once the garlic is crushed, to be able to hold that garlic. In which case, at that point, it's doing a malacha that was miyuchad for that was had there. Okay, so that's two different approaches, but that's not our main sugya right now. What bothers us is that it says over here, you cannot move it if it wouldn't be for that. Now, why? Answers Rabba, why? You know why. There's the famous other shita that we've mentioned a couple of times and we're going to be getting to later. And the famous other shita, which we're going to be getting to, is Rabbi Nechemia shita. Rabbi Nechemia shita, when it comes to muktzah, is very chamur. He holds that you cannot even move something which is entirely for purposes of heter. And you can't even move that unless it's for the main purpose for which it was designed. And therefore, you can't even use it for something slightly different. So obviously, And then therefore, you can't use it for something different entirely. That's for sure. And because of that, obviously, according to him, you can't move this miducha. I wasn't talking. I'm going according to all of the other shitas. And there's no problem of a kalisha malach to le'iser being used l'tzorach gufa. Okay, says Abai, I got another problem for you. Hey, Svet. So let's, we can skip the bitch on my part. But the question over there is where you have an, you have the Eli, which is the pestle, as opposed to we've been talking about the mortar over here. Now let's move on to the pestle. So the question over there is, if you're going to use this pestle, what they would actually be able to do is take the pestle to support a piece of meat. And then you would actually make that what you're going to cook, chop the meat up against. And Beit Hillel was matir that. Now, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel are made it, that once you already used it, kitzev alav basar, you can't move the pestle afterwards, let's say to put it back in the cabinet or something. You can't move it at all. So you see from there that something which is a klisha, malakta liyasar, cannot be moved. And that's true according to everybody, even according to Beit Hillel, who was matir specifically over there, only litzorach simchas yontev. I mean, don't even want to talk about that issue. Maybe you'll say that was nogeh Beit Shammai. But certainly over here, everybody's matir. You can't move it to put it back in the closet. I'd explain that. Answers Rabbah. Now, Rabbah, we're given now an insight into Rabbah's thought process. So initially, Rabbah thought, you know what? I could just tell him the same answer. What is bothering me for? I could say that this is also going, I'll leave it to Rabbi Nechemya. But then he had a better idea because he heard that Rabbi Hanina bar Shalmiya quoted Rav as saying that there are certain things that everybody is made of, cannot be moved at all. Now, those are the things that we have come to recognize as a thing that is not simply set into a particular place, but that you're worried about in terms of losing a lot of money if it gets any kind of damage to it. So that is called muktzav machmat chisaron kis. And everybody is made that where we're talking about CK and ziyare and mizore. Now, there's many different shitas about what these things are. Rashi says they're dying. They're used by dyers. Fine. Tosfos says, brings the oruch, that they're various kind of things that are used for pressing clothes or the spindle or a little kind of hammer. And others learn yet other pshat, but it doesn't really matter because who cares what they are? I mean, the bottom line is that the point of the Gemara is that Rav Paskin, that those things that are used as part of your professional toolkit, that you're careful about and that you would definitely not want to be used for any other purpose, and you take good care of them, you polish them up after you use them, put them back in the package, and so on and so forth. Those things are given to kapir alayhu, miyached luhu makom. You basically are mikatzeh them. You set them aside biyadayim. And that setting aside biyadayim, everybody is made, is the essence of muktzah, because it's out of your mind to use. Now, hani nani, therefore, Rabbah said, listen, there are many types of mortar and pestles which you want to be careful about. And therefore, so we're talking about over here, a mortar and pestle that you put carefully away in a place in the cabinet. You do not allow them to be used for other things. So therefore, everybody is made over here. I don't need to say it's going on Liban Rebbe Nechemya. Now we're going to see that there are alternatives coming up to this pshat later on in the sugya today. But this gives us so far two possible explanations. Either it could be Rebbe Nechemya, or it could be talking about something which is muktzim amachmas chisaron kis, and therefore is going to be also asr alibi dekulei alma, not only like Rebbe Nechemya. We'll see that we have some other options. Itma. Now, again, getting back to the question of what is the hammer? Because that's the way that the Mishnah introduces the whole issue, right? What is the hammer? So, Reb Chiya bar Ava Amar Reb Yochanan, the hammer that we're talking about in the Mishnah, we're talking about even a hammer of a goldsmithy. Now, that kind of hammer is delicate because remember we learned before that the one of the things that they did in the Mishkan is the way in which we understood Makib Patish is that if you were making gold foil, you need to have a perfectly smooth hammer and anvil because the slightest, I mean, you're talking about over there, maybe not like modern foil, but still you're talking about something which can be measured in really in microns nowadays. So the slightest imperfection in the hammer is going to be a disaster. On the other hand, it's easy to fix because we're talking about something over there that can be, talking about a soft metal hammer, which then if you bang it against an anvil, it actually will smooth it completely. So the chiddush that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that even that type of hammer is considered to be a kli shemalach to le'isr, is not considered to be a muktzimach le'shisar and kiss, and therefore the Mishnah is referring to even that kind of hammer, you could use to crack nuts. Reb Shama bar Abba Amar, I say, you could take it one step further, and we could be talking about even the hammer that is used by a spicer, a spice maker. And the idea over there is that I'm very careful, not because of damage to the hammer, I'm very careful over there because of bad tastes or bad smells that might accrue to the hammer if it's used for other things. And when you're talking about spice, the slightest type of mistaste is going to cost you a lot of money. So I don't want to use that. I'm not going to use it a piece of metal and give a metallic taste to my spices. And I'm not going to use it on a nut, perhaps. I mean, that's what you would think. And in fact, we'll see. This is machlokes. And you would think I would not use it on a nut and then have to put up this plant is allergenic to people who are careful. No, I don't want to put that on the label. You know, that cost me all those customers. So because of that, you might think it's considered to be muktze. Machlokes chisron kis. I taina to you, says Reb Shema bar Abba, even that's okay. Now, mandi omer de basamim. So according to him, kol shekin de zahavim, because they're even more makpid than a gold hammer. But mandi omer shel zahavim, if Reb Yochanan only said that you're not going to consider a goldsmithy to be using a hammer which is muktzimach l'shisar and kis, but as basam, definitely is going to be very careful. And a basam is considered to be muktzimach l'shisar and kis. This is the first place that we've gotten to an actual machlokas as to how subtle is the distinction of a dover that you mean miyachid le'makomo and want to make certain is not damaged. What type of damage are we talking about? Okay, the next thing that we had in the Mishnah was to use one of the weaver's spindle or a sharp kli, and to use the kush and the karkar to get an apple on it, you know, or you want to spear a strawberry with it or something, like we do today with toothpicks. You turn it up on it. Let's say that you took a fig that was immature, and you were tamna betevin. You put it under straw. Now, straw, the reason you would do that is because you want it to ripen. And that was one of the ways that they would bring it to ripen faster. And the problem is, of course, that the straw is muktzah on Shabbos because we're talking about the type of tevin that is used for making cement or concrete. So that's something that, of course, such as Bichud Binyan, is considered to be like moving stones on Shabbos, maybe, or certainly kli shemalach to le'isr. So charora shetamana b'kechalim. Or sometimes you make these kind of barbecued or coal-baked breads, and initially at the onset of Shabbos, the coals that you had buried it in were actually burning, and so because of that, obviously it was muktzah at the beginning of Shabbos. Now everything's cold. Now you want to take it out because now it's ready. So now the question is like this. As we spoke about earlier, if some of the fig or some of the bread is exposed, then you could just pick up the edge, then you're allowed to move it. But if not, you're not allowed to move it. Whereas Rebbe Elazar ben Tanai says, well, even if it's not open, all you need to do is use the kush and the karkar, which is the Mishnah, and you could use that, and then you pull it off. And then the straw or whatever coal that's left on it is just going to fall off on the side. You don't have to actually go and move that directly. So in other words, what he says is that tiltul min hatzad of the muktzah, just because I have to lift up the coal for a moment before it falls off, is not a problem. So yod's min hatzad is mutter. Amr of Nachman, halacha k'Reb Elazar ben Tanai, that's how we paskin. What? That's what Reb Nachman said. Reb Nachman says that tiltul min hatzad is mutter, and it's not considered to be tiltul. Tiltul min hatzad lav shmei tiltul. But it was Reb Nachman who said before, remember we had the whole discussion about putting a radish in the ground, a picked radish. You put it in the ground in order to keep it ripe, right? So the question is, says Reb Nachman, well, it depends how you put the radish in. If you put the radish in with the leaves of the radish facing up, and the thinner part of the radish facing down. Okay, so then if it's right side up, that's okay if you want to pick it up with one of the leaves. But if you did it the other way around, you've got like a little bit of root that's sticking out of the bottom towards the top, towards you. You want to pull it out, You can't do that. Why? Because then you're unavoidably, because of the shape of the radish, which is now a upside down triangle, when you pick it up from the thin side, you're going to be lifting some of that dirt out with you, and only subsequently it's going to fall off. So Bishlam had to take it out right side up over there. I just remove it. If the dirt falls, that's not my concern. I didn't move the dirt. Masha Einkein, if it's upside down and I'm pulling it up like that, then there's no way for me to avoid picking the dirt up a little bit before it falls. And Reb Nachman said, you can't do that. Why? Is it not tiltum menatzad? So how did Reb Nachman say over here, you can use the karkar and spear it? Says the Gemara, you're right. But the truth is that Reb Nachman had charata from that, and we know that because the Tosfos says, look, I mean, we obviously, how do we know which one he had charata from? That we know from other sugyas by the consensus of the halacha. Okay, the next thing we had is that you could take a needle and remove a splinter. So, Sholach Le Rava Berei De Rabba Le Rav Yosef, Yelamdenu Rabbeinu. And this brings us right back to Kalim again. So, what I want to know is, please, Rabbi, what would be the din if you've got this needle? It's a sewing needle, a normal sewing needle. A sewing needle has two very important parts. It has the hole on one side through which you put the thread, and it has a sharp point on the other side. So how about if it's missing one of those two crucial components? So either it broke, and the hole got broken off, or the point broke off. Now, what would be the din legabe mukt? So is it now mukts and it's no longer a kli? Or marle, that's our Mishnah, isn't it? In our Mishnah, it says you could take a sewing needle, a machat shel yad, and you can take out a splinter with it. Now, if you ask the splinter, Mr. Splinter, but do you mind if the needle that I use to remove you does not have a hole in it for thread? The splinter will say, absolutely, it's perfectly all right with me. So, what does the coats care about whether it's removed with a needle that has an eye in it or it doesn't have an eye in it? Really, it doesn't matter very much. So, since the Mishnah holds that this is considered to be a kli, and what defines it is its use as a kli for taking out splinters, so then what's the difference? I mean, obviously, that doesn't address losing the point, because you definitely need the point. But the point is that the idea is still consistent. If I'm going to be using it for something where the point isn't essential, then that would be just as good as saying the eye isn't essential. Esve, wait a minute, said Rabba Barabba. What's going on over here? What about the Mishnah and Kalim? You can't be arguing on the Mishnah and Kalim. My God, this was our Mishnah. Now, obviously, that means you're being mavatal the shame kli by taking off either the eye of the needle or the point of the needle. Set up by it. What are you driving me crazy with the Mishnah and Kalim over here? We're learning Shabbos, man. Tuma Ashabat Karamita, what you're asking me from Kalim on Shabbos? I mean, there's completely different criteria when it comes to defining something legabe tuma, or where it comes to defining something legabe mukta. When it comes to tuma, I mean, the point over there is the Torah discusses in Milchemes Midyan. Well, sounds familiar. The Torah discusses in Milchemes Midyan, kol kli ma'aseh means something that is a usable tool, okay? This is not a usable tool. This is certainly not the tool that it's made for. And Le'inyan Shabbos, Le'inyan Shabbos, all I need is something that's usable in order for it not to be mukts. Is it usable? Fine. Thank you very much. What doesn't matter to me once it's usable, and therefore it has a completely different concept of kli. Omar Rava, no, I disagree. I actually think that the kasha was a very good kasha. The interrelationship with the tuma, the dinim of tuma in Kalim, is perfectly consistent with Shabbos. Now, if you're going to tell me, inin tuma lav manehu, look, you're saying it's not considered to be something that is This is I quite understand the difference between kli ma'aseh or kli that's usable. I mean, it's not the same thing. So le'inyan Shabbos should not be considered to be a mana. So they said to Rava, that's not possible. Look at the Braita. The Braita says beferish that if you have a needle, it doesn't matter whether it's got an eye in the needle or it doesn't have an eye in the needle. You can use it on Shabbos. which is exactly what Abaya was saying, that there's a big difference. Lo amru, listen to this, word for word what Abaya said. Lo amru nikuva, the only mention of nikuva is nogea the dinim of Tumah and not the dinim of Shabbos. So what are you saying that there has to be the same? It's obviously not the same. The Braita says it's not the same. Abaye himself said, that's not a fair question. Even though it supports me, I got to tell you, it doesn't prove a darn thing. Because according to Rava, Rava will simply say that what we're talking about in the Braita is needles that are not yet completed. It's not talking about you had a needle and you broke off the back. That's something else. Because that's Shivrei Kalim. Shivrei Kalim is not going to be Makabel Tumah. But over here, we're talking about Golmei Kalim. I mean, they're in the process of being completed. So now, the way that you make needles is you take a lot of wire, and you cut the wire. And then after you cut the wire, you take a hammer, bang on the end with a little piece sticking out of it, and that forms a little hole on the end. You haven't gotten to that point yet, but you've got the sharp end, which is the wire per se, right? So now, that ain't Achinami. That is considered to be Legabe Tumah Golmei Kalim. It's not completed. I was going to make a needle out of it. But Legabe Muktzah, obviously that's a perfectly good kli for Muktzah, because if I decide that I want to use it to take out a coats, so that's what it is. It's basically a medical instrument to take out coatsim. What's the difference? Why would I have to finish it anymore? In the other case where we're talking about, where Rava said that you can't compare it, that's where it's talking about Hecha the Nitel Charara or Uktsa. If it was a perfectly kosher kli, and now it became Shavur, so then it's considered to be not a kli anymore because people don't keep the thing like that around the house. They throw it in the garbage pail. So Adam Zorkelevin Grutaot, it's basically scrap metal. And that's how people view it. And because of that, it's like a stone on Shabbos. You can't move that. That's, of course, it's true. So don't compare the two different sugyas. Now, another question from Nachman over here was Asuve Yanuka. Now, Asuve Yanuka is not the same thing that we had before about Lefufe Yanuka. Remember, we were talking about the belief that unless you swaddle an infant, it's never going to grow properly. And this was until very recent. As a matter of fact, it's still in many places. It's still a belief. So that they would swaddle the infants to make sure that they grow properly. That's Lefufe Yanuka. This is Asuve Yanuka. Asuve Yanuka does explains that he proves that they have to be different sugyas because otherwise we run into a lot of contradictions. So the case of Asuve Yanuka is where perhaps you actually have a dislocated limb. And now you just want to make sure that everything is back in shape. Now, this surprisingly happens very easily with children. I don't know how many of you parents have noticed this, but if you swing your child to something like that, you may end up very easily with a dislocated shoulder or something like that, because the children's limbs are nowhere near as tightly in terms of the various connective tissues. Nowhere near as tight as an adult's. It's also very easy to fix if you learn how to fix it. So Reb Nachman, so doing that, Asuve Yanuka, Reb Nachman holds that's usur, and Reb Sheshes holds it's mutter. Now, obviously, we're talking about a case over here where it doesn't in any way, it's not being gorem, tremendous tsar to a tinok, which is considered to be something that the Chazal Matis will see. And we're talking about just like, is there an isur of a medical procedure which is not really medical. In other words, anybody can do this. It doesn't require shchikat samamanim. The doctor in the old city actually had a wonderful doctor, Dr. Farber. And instead of my bothering him every other day to fix my kid's dislocated pieces, he just showed me what to do for various things that would be pulled out. It's just, you got to learn how to do it. It takes 3 minutes. So it's not really something that is a chashash of actual shrika samamanim. There's nothing to grind. There's no medication to give. And therefore, according to Reb Sheshes, it's mutter. But the problem is that Reb Nachman holds it's considered to be tikkun. Forget about medicine. You're right. Fine. It's not medicine. But why isn't tikkun of a person the same as tikkun of a kli, let's say? So it would be like a makabapatish. Omrim Nachlim Inami, you know, I'll show you. Basically, we've got a Mishnah that seems to say later on exactly this. It says, Ein osin afektoizin, you're not allowed to make an emetic. Now, an emetic that we're talking about over here is a Roman, rather disgusting kind of idea, which is not used to relieve stomach distress, but which is rather used to allow you to eat like a slob. So you sit around, you eat five hamburgers, and then you take an emetic and vomit them up, and now you're all ready to eat more. Now, if that's the way you guys like to eat, you can go to Rome. But Lisa, this is what they used to do. So medication, it certainly isn't. However, it does empty your stomach. And because of that, and it says you're not allowed to take it, and obviously that's not because shrikat samamanim. So in other words, what it means is that this is a tikkun. In other words, you're repairing the individual in terms of what he wants to be repaired. He wants to be a hungry individual. Rav Sheshet says, God, there's no comparison between the two. I mean, over there, you're telling me you can't make an emetic. You're telling me that normal human beings live on emetics? That's insane. You got to be a crazy Roman. Over here, we're talking about something that is normally done with a child's limbs. That's going to be urche. That's normal. As a matter of fact, I'll prove it to you, says Rav Sheshet. What about the mission over here in Shabbos, where it says, you're allowed to take a machat shel yad litol bo atakot? Now, why don't we say that taking out a splinter is considered to be a repair? So if it's considered to be a repair, then it should be also not because of anything else. Ah, says Rav Nachman, no comparison. On the contrary, a repair is a repair of the actual person. Is the coats, is that part of the person? Over there, the coats simply penetrated the skin. So it's pocket from the outside. That's not repairing the person. That's removing a splinter. Mashenkin over here, I mean, whatever is dislocated, that's not pocket from the outside. So putting things into their proper location is certainly considered to be a normal thing, and it's not considered to be a makom patash or a tikkun mone. And now Richie, who certainly would not be sitting at his breakfast table, but would instead be looking out at the beautiful, beautiful outdoors and would be sharing them with...
It's cold and dark, 14 degrees out there. I'm going to come for a little bit of warmth, cup of coffee,
Gosh, you say it. You say it with such feeling that I think I'm going to go right now and get myself a nice comforting cup of coffee, which would make Panea happy. Go ahead. Beautiful. So now we get on to additional, and this Mishnah finally is going to start the sugya of the history of Muktzah. It turns out that the history of Muktzah is very, very complex and represents a historical development, as we will see. But first, let's take a look at this Mishnah. So you have over here a kana. Now, a kana is actually made out of a piece of cane. Normally, a piece of cane can be hollow all the way through, right? But oftentimes, the wood will have a knot. If it has a knot, then it ends up getting a stopper in it. And you like those for making a kumus. If you're a sofer, you like to have that little knot at the end because it widens it, which is very similar to the modern fountain pen, where it's designed in that way to have the equivalent of a knot. So if you have a kana that is used for zeitim, what is this kana used for? So remember the way in which olives, first we are mosaic the olives, get all the olives together, put them in a container and let them sit for a while where they start softening. And that's the Komer Shel Zeitim. In order to check them, and you take a stick and you poke them and look around and see the coloration and how much oil is oozing out of them. And that seems to be the only use of it, which means that it's basically a stick. And it says over here that it makes a difference if there's a knot at the end of the stick. I mean, who cares, really? Which the Gemara, of course, is going to ask and explain. So, im yesh kesher berosho, then it can actually be mekabel tuma. If there's no kesher berosho, it cannot be mekabel tuma. But either way, it certainly is a kli that can be taken on Shabbat. Now, here for the first time, we've got this. The Mishnah is directly addressing, and again, it's like follows. It's amazing how it just flows directly from the previous sugya. The Mishnah directly addresses the question of the interrelationship between the tuma and the non-tuma, except that in this case, the question of its being tummy is not a shaila of whether it's a kli ma'aseh at all. It's a shaila, as we know from Kalim very well, that some materials, even if they are kalim, they're only going to be mekabel tuma if they have a beit kibul. Aha, that's the difference. So a cane, which is basically a pipe that does not have a beit kibul, should not be mekabel tuma. And nonetheless, it's perfectly usable for what it's made for, and therefore is l'gabi Shabbos, a perfect kind of kli. Here, for sure, there's no connection between the Dinei Shabbos and the technicality of whether something has a Beit Kibul, because who cares about Beit Kibul? And therefore asks the Gemara, why, in fact, just because it has a knot on the end, why would that make it klei kibul? It still remains pshute kli eitz, because you don't use the area of the knot as a kli, so pshute kli eitz not mekabel tuma, because my taima dumya de sak beinan. Remember our famous drosha that only things that are kol kli eitz o beged o or o sak. That famous pasuk has been part of our learning now for months in Kalim. And anything like that that is compared to sak, it has to be mitaltel maleverik. It's got to be able to be something that you can carry things in. And that gave rise to all kinds of different dinim, like the shiurim of Kalim and so on. So how come over here, if it doesn't have a kli kibul and is not similar to sak, why is it mitame? There is a very cute use, which is a trick of the trade. And the trick of the trade is that where you've got a knot at the end, then you have like a tiny, half an ounce kli. What do you do? What do you use that for? Because when you stick it into the zeitim, you can not only check the color of the zeitim and their softness, but you can then flip it over and look at the liquid that's been gathered in that little half ounce on top up to the knot in the wood. And you can tell by its consistency what level of oil it's ready to give forth. Because of that trick of the trade, it now becomes a useful actual beit kibul. Okay, Richie, you're on again, sir. Rabbi Yossi Omer, the definitive statement, which seems to destroy Mukta once and for all, kol ha-kelim nitalim, you can move anything you want on Shabbos. Pooh, whoa. Except for two things. Chutz min ha-masar ha-gadol, v'yateid shom ma-ha-re-shah. So you cannot move a large industrial saw, which is used for cutting through actual roof beams. Okay, that's a roof beams carpenter. But what about a Rashi actually uses the word coulter in Rashi, which is the English word as well, which is the piece of the plow that actually goes into the ground and cuts through the ground. Now, these two things, because of the fact that they need to be very, very straight, you don't want them to be damaged in any way. They need to be sharp and straight, and therefore you will not use them for anything else. So basically, Rabbi Yossi is codifying the idea that the only type of muksa that we have among kalim, that is to say, obviously we have muksa that isn't kalim at all, but if it's kalim, the only type of kli that would be usur to move, now this doesn't mean that there isn't isur, obviously you can't move it for tzorech ha-isur, things like that, but the only thing that you will not be able to apply, tzorech gufo maybe, or tzorech mekomo maybe, I mean that we'll see, or bichamal etzel maybe, that we're going to see, but the only thing that will take absolutely no excuse for moving it is something that is mukze machmas chisor and kiss. Now we've been riding closer and closer to this moment. Now obviously it doesn't mean two kalim. It means kalim that are similar to these two kalim in terms of how careful you would be with them. Omer of Nachman. There's other things that you'd also be very careful about. An uchla de katsri. That's the same as yateid shel macharisha. Or Abaya says, a charba de ushkefe. Or a sakina dashkaft. Or a chatsina de nagre. Those are all professional kalim that you'd be very careful about. As far as what these things are, again, I don't know whether it matters that much. It's machlokas and over here. There's two possibilities of an uchla de katsre. I don't know how many of you remember the good old days when you used to iron kalim. And what you would do is you would put some sizing or starch into a very special kind of kli. I'm supposing that in Joburg they still see this, but among those who no longer have shamashim, especially in these days of Black Lives Matter, you know, I mean, chas v'sholem to hire a Black for anything but being your boss. So if you have a kli that has a little sprinkler device on the bottom, it's got these little holes on the bottom, you fill it up with starch, you put your finger over the top. And then whenever you need to put a little starch under the iron, you lift your finger, a little bit of it comes out and waters the and waters the clothing. That's one possibility. We spoke about this earlier where Rashi brings it might be just the opposite. It might be the same idea of a kli that's got holes in it, but the holes are meant to work not top down but bottom up for releasing spray, which means that you'll burn stuff in there, and then the smell, the good smell of the incense will go into Kalim. Again, Chaval al Azman to talk about the details of it. Charpa de Ushkafi is somebody who's making, he's a leather worker's, a sakina dash kafta, Tosfos learns, actually means a sakin shel shechita. And that, it, people are very makbid on. I mean, you don't want to have to work a half an hour because somebody was pogame your sakin shel shechita. And because of that, you put that in a careful velvet-lined box and don't let anybody touch that. Rashi learns it's more like a butcher's knife, which is, of course, nowhere near as sensitive. It would make a big difference to la halacha. A chatzina denagri is an adz, and all of those things need to be sharp. You're careful with them. You put them away, and they're the same as the yatecha macharesha, same as Rashi's coulter. Tana Rabbana. And here is the history of muktzah. Now, Rabosai, I must tell you that this is a very important moment in the Masechet, and I will tell you why. Because if you take a look at how it is that we've been developing the issues of Shabbos, Hotzah, and the other Malachas. So we first took a look at Hotzah, and that was for very obvious reasons. We finally came to understand, because nothing more fully defines the relationship of Shabbos to Mishkan than Hotzah. Because the Mishkan is, in fact, meant for Hotzah, and that's the whole idea. Because of that, when we ended up finally getting to an analysis of what is Rishus HaRab and what is Rishus HaYochid, everything dependent on the strangest way, on the crushim of the Mishkan. What? Yes, because of the trucks that were used to move the crushim, which of course is Hotzah. The nature of Rishus HaYochid and Rishus HaRabim is the difference between the spaces of the parked wagons that carried the Mishkan. These are unbelievable ideas, which brought us to understand the crushim, which brought us to understand the Ariga of the Vilanot, which brought us to understand the trappings of the Oyel Ala Mishkan, which brought us to understand the Ktiva, because you needed to have the letters on the crushim in order to properly match them up, which we did not realize, which brought us, of course, to Begadim. We had that whole beautiful section, Big Dekuna and so on. But what we did not realize is that it also brought us to discuss fire. Because the next thing, of course, is the destruction of the Mishkan. And the Mishkan, Hitzit Esh B'Tzion, the Mishkan is called a Mishkan because it is a mashkan to fire and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, which led us to the next discussion, which it seems on the surface have nothing to do with anything, firemen. Firemen who are goyim, relating the issue of the special oath of Shabbos to Bnei Yisrael, not to Akum, and how it is that we want to avoid even the smell of Shabbos, the spice of Shabbos, which will not work for Akum, the food of Shabbos, all of the differences between Osi Beni, Levein Bnei Yisrael, Kiddush on Shabbos, Havdola after Shabbos, Seudos of Shabbos. All of these things are what is Miyached Shabbos in terms of its achone for Bnei Yisrael. Remarkably, the very next thing that we need to discuss is the rebuilding of the Mishkan. The rebuilding of the Mishkan began in the days of Nehemiah and Ezra. And wouldn't you know it, a crisis developed at the time of the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, and that was people were carrying on Shabbos. Can you imagine? Whole description about how it was that there it was, Yerushalayim on Shabbos, and people are bringing in Schora, and they're moving it around. And it was at that moment that they were Gozer Muktzah. And that means that Muktzah was an extension of Hotzah. Can you believe it? And as the Rambam brings, Le'aloch, it's an extension of Hotzah. It's not an extension that since it's a Kalisha Malachto Le'Yisr, so we're afraid you're going to do a Yisr with it. No. has to do directly with the zilzul in Hotzah. Now, that means that after a Masechet that has been dedicated to the ideas of a Hotzah and its relationship to the Mishkan, in order to get to the next step, we need to see how we dealt with the problem of Hotzah. Bimei Ezra v'Nehemiah, and it was a disaster, and because of that, we're going to see that it has a long history. So, Tana Rabbanan, Barishona, when it came immediately to that first desperate tikkun of how to stop the incredible zilzol of Shabbos that had developed during the time of the Golas, they decided that there's only three things you're allowed to move on Shabbos, not two things you're not allowed to move on Shabbos. And that is, you're allowed to use a maktsua shel devela. You can have a knife that is used for cutting your pressed figs that normally you need a special kli for. And you're allowed to use our famous Listerine Zoama, which we talked about, is the skimmer ladle for taking off the filthy parts that come up on the pot of, it's like a foam on your cooking. And you're allowed to use a table knife, a sakin ktana agabe ashulchan. Nothing else. Now, Tosis points out, nothing else means no other tools. It doesn't mean that you were not allowed to use containers. You were always allowed to have dishes and bowls and things like that, but no tools. Okay. Then, when things got a little better and people started taking Shabbos seriously, they were matir. And then when it got better yet, they were matir again. And then when it got better yet, they were matir again. And then when they got better yet, they finally reached the stage where they came to Rabbi Yossi. And Ad she'amru kol ha'kelim nitalim b'shabbat, chutz min ha'masar ha'gadol v'yateit shom acharesha, astonishing. Now, when it says over here they were matir, and then they were matir, and then they were matir, and then they were finally matir again, what were the different stages? Says Abai, the different stages is that stage number one, they finally allowed you, in the first stage, they allowed you to use a davar shemalachto leheter, but only letzarach gufa. So let's say if you had a fork, you could use the fork for its main purpose. You could not use the fork for holding up, let's say, a book on to read. No. And that is, whoa, a davar shemalachto leheter letzarach gufa. Okay, that is the Rebbe Nehemia stage. Note that these stages are actually represented la'alocha. So according to Rebbe Nehemia, that's what we stuck with, okay? And that's all that was ever mutter. Then they went around and they were chozer, the next stage two. They were matir dover shemalachto laheter, even if you need to move it off of the table. That's called the tzorach makoma. The third stage heter is they allowed you to use a dover shemalachto laiser, but only letzorach gufo, not letzorach makoma. But it would only be something that could easily be moved, not that you need two hands or two people to move it. And the last stage, which is ad she'amru, you can even move things big enough that they require two hands, except for the coulter again, right, of the Maharisha, which means that according to the way Abaya is explaining it, we're still left the usher to use a dover, to move a klishim lachtali yisr, letzorach mikomo, because he said you can only move it letzorach gufa. Rava says no. If it says they were matir, okay, the first stage of matir really makes sense to you that a kli shemalachto leheter. It makes a difference whether it's a tzarech gufa, a tzarech mekomo. The way in which you relate to a kli shemalachto leheter, darn it, is that it's leheter. I mean, understand, it's something that I no longer look at as being an issue with Shabbos. Once I don't look at it as an issue with Shabbos, what's the difference if I move it to use it for its own purposes, or I use it because I move it because I need to get it off of the table? That makes no sense. If you were talking about a kli shemalachto leiser, I can understand that differentiation. But I do not understand two stages of a kli shemalachto leheter, first legufo and then lemakomo. It makes no sense to me. And therefore, I say, the way to use it is this. Stage one. They were matir adover shemalachto laheter, but that was whether it was a tzorach guf or a tzorach makoma. It makes no difference. Then they went ahead and they were chozer and they were matir, even moving it for its own purposes. It's outdoors. You don't want it to get rusty. You don't want it to get damaged in the sun. Even for that, you can move it. So chozer itir b'chamal itself. That's a completely different concept of moving things not to use for the purposes of Shabbos at all. That I understand is a different stage. Okay. The next stage was that they were matir adover shemalachto laiser, And that was also Letzorach Gufo, Letzorach Makomo, but again, not Mechama Letzel, that they weren't Mater. And I agree that it depended on the size. Do you need two people to move it? Can we move it one people person? Until they finally got to the idea, you can move anything unless it's Muktzim HaMachwetz Chisar and Kiyas, which is Kol HaKel Nitzol B'Shabbat, and that would be Chutz Miyamasar HaGadol, and so on. Etve Abaya, so Abaya asked him the same question that we asked before. What do you do with the fact that you're not allowed to move a mortar unless it has garlic in it, okay? The same question that was asked Rabba earlier. So I want to understand how you're going to learn with this. I mean, obviously, Abaya knew, as Tosis explained, you could always say this going a little bit of Rabbi Nechemia, obviously. But I want to know whether Rabba's got another approach or not. And Imlav ein metatlim. And indeed, Rava said, I have a very simple explanation. What it means over here, you're not allowed to move it mechama letzel. That's the point. Because I don't have to say it's going like Rabbi Nechemia. It's talking about mechama letzel particularly. And that's all that it said. The reason, only reason it mentions the idea of having the garlic in it is to cover all of the bases, even though Stosis explains. So then he asked the next question that was asked earlier to Rabba, that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel was both agreed that if you used the pestle, you can't put it back in the cabinet. How do you explain that? Same way. He says, Rabba, I don't have a problem with that. It's talking about mechama letzel. In other words, after you used it to chop meat, you cannot take it away from a place where it started to rain, and maybe I'm afraid it's going to get rusty or something like that. The only reason I talked about the chopping of the meat was to make it work out of Libet HaBeit Shammai, as Tosis explains. Omer Rabbi Chanina, this whole thing began, Bimei Nechemia ben Chachalia, Nishneit Mishnah Zu, because it says that they saw people, Ra'iti B'Yuda, Dorchim, Jitot B'Shabbat, Umeviim Ha'aremot. I saw people carrying in, they actually went ahead and they pressed wine, and they would carry in from the Sada.